Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color. NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm a disease of success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact, shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter. In the first degree, I am
fresh, young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't say that y'all ready, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing all my life with you. Success, success. Young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't say that y'all ready, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing all my life with you. Success, success.
And we welcome you to the latest edition of the Green and White Show here on this Sunday, February 7th, Super Bowl Day, this 2016. Haas, my man, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm excited. You know, you get up, you know, you smell that Super Bowl in the air. Oh, I can't wait to get this party started. I mean, we'll talk a little Jets football, a little Giants. We'll get into the NFL news, a little NBA as well. You know, we had some UFC last night, so you know we're going to talk a lot of MMA as well. But it's all about Super Bowl 50 in that beautiful city, my second home, Amiri, San Francisco. So, all right, enough of me talking. Are you ready to talk some Jets football or what?
Yes, sir, Haas. We have some Jets on tap, of course. And with the Super Bowl being had, we will definitely dive into the big game, Haas. But I guess, you know, let's throw it back home a little bit. Let's take it to the team. Right here in New Jersey, New York, Jets talk to begin the show.
Yes, without a doubt. Brandon Marshall making some appearances as well. He's a great personality and love having him in green and white saying, you know, getting in the news for saying a couple of things. We all know Fitz is his quarterback and he loves his, you know, Ryan Fitzgerald. There was a little news being made with Colin Kaepernick or a report coming out saying that Colin Kaepernick would favor coming to the New York Jets. As he's still looking to get out of San Francisco, and Brandon Marshall reacting to that, talking about how much he loves Ryan Fitzpatrick. But it is Super Bowl time here in the Northeast. And you know what? When you're talking Jets football and you're talking Super Bowl, we all know what game comes to mind. That's right. It's Super Bowl III, Amiri. 1968, Joe Namath over the Baltimore Colts, 16-7. Yo, did you know they almost shut them out? The Colts, an 18-point favorite. 18-point favorite. Mm-hmm. And the Jets almost shut out the Baltimore Colts. They get a late touchdown as they sub out their starting quarterback and get Johnny Unitas in the game. Probably should have been in the game the whole time. But anyway, the New York Jets, Super Bowl III, 1968. You know the Jets fans can't wait to get back.
You know, I think when you have that type of game to rest your laurels on, essentially, I think any franchise would love to have that type of story, that type of Super Bowl appearance, Haas. And I mean, I think when it comes to, you know, Jets history, that is obviously has to be the most memorable game in the franchise's history. And when you again consider the underdog status, you consider the braggadocious attitude that Joe Namath had entering that game. And also considering the fact that it was, like, at the time, it was AFL versus the NFL. Like, the AFL was this joker of a league. The NFL was this supposed to be this established,
right.
Sturdy, this mm-hmm. this unbeatable
machine. They were the gold standard of football, Amiri. They were the
exactly.
gold standard of football, all right? They'd sent AFL teams to the big game twice, and both teams weren't able to compete with the NFL team. This was a game that, without the Jets winning this game, who knows how much longer it would have taken for both leagues to end up merging. You know, this game was, in essence, the beginning of the NFL that we know today. Them signing away one of the great college football stars out of Alabama and Joe Namath and able to get him to sign with the AFL over the NFL was another big step towards this. They were signing away some of the great players of the NFL as well. they needed to come together, and this game showing that their teams could compete with NFL teams on a grand stage was tantamount to both leagues uniting and like I said, bringing us the NFL that we know today. So not just, you know, a Super Bowl in the memory of Jets fans, but really NFL fans should go back and really understand what the meaning of Super Bowl III was to the NFL that we get to enjoy, man, each and every Sunday.
Right, right, and I think that's a special moment, obviously, and I'm sure as we begin to see the New York Jets make a push back to that level, you know, back to the postseason, back into the conversation, those mm-hmm. games will be reflected on, and will be, you know, savored as the years continue, I am sure. So, you know, when it comes to a Super Bowl game like that, I think definitely Super Bowl III is one of the most historic Super Bowls of all time, just because, again, considering the monumental aspect of it, but also just from the Jets' perspective, it's certainly a game that should never be forgotten. I don't think ever will, because of just the allure and the legacy that game holds, you know, now so many years later.
You know what? Let's get into it. What do you think? We saw how good the Jets did this year. You know, higher than you know the expectations after a 4-1 season coming in. You know, 10 wins, falling at least one short of getting into the postseason this season. Amiri, what do you think? How close are the New York Jets right now, in your opinion, to getting to a big game?
That's an interesting question. I think based on the team, honestly, Haas, I think this team this year had a pretty good shot of making it to the postseason. Obviously, they were kind of shut out at the last second. But I think this team, if they had made it to the postseason, especially if they had, you know, been on that six-game win streak, Haas, I think they would have had a pretty decent chance at making it possibly to the AFC Championship game. I don't know if the Jets would be anywhere near you know, the Denver Broncos or you know, even New England. But I think when it comes to the AFC specifically, because I think that's where you have to start looking at the AFC, I think the Jets have a pretty decent chance. They're right there in the power rankings. Obviously, now that Denver's on its way out, you're kind of looking at teams like New England, potentially Indianapolis. But other than that, like, it's a wide open conference. You know, you have teams like obviously Cincinnati and Pittsburgh who perennially are there, and there's not going to be as much of a powerhouse team perhaps in the AFC as the Patriots age, but you have to assume that New England's number one after Denver and Peyton Manning perhaps part ways. But then after that, Haas, is there a team that really stands out to you in the AFC?
You know, what Kansas City did this season is pretty remarkable. They'll give any NFL team a run for their money next season. So I can see them making a push. What's going to end up happening in Cincinnati after their, you know, pretty good season and still no playoff accomplishment to show for it. We'll see if they're able to pick up the pieces there and make another good run and make a dent in the AFC postseason. But there's a couple of teams right off the bat that should be competitive. And then, of course, you know, you've got New England, of course, like you said, you know, the Colts, you know, picking up the pieces as well in Indianapolis, getting Andrew Luck healthy would be priority number one there, and getting him some support and protection should be priority number two as well. So there are some AFC teams that could challenge. You know, you look back and Jets fans, and really, they're going to really regret 2015. Okay, they're going to regret not getting into the postseason in 2015, because if you really take a look at the competition, you saw a hobbled Steelers team in the end. You saw, you know, a New England team where if you could just get to New England in the AFC Championship game, you just beat them once. Then you've got a shot against that team that you know very well. Look at all it took for Denver to beat them. It wasn't that strong of an effort there. I mean, the Patriots with a second half push nearly won that game. So, you know, the New York Jets, this is a season they're going to regret not, you know, getting into the postseason and making a push, because, you know, the way things fell, we could easily be talking about the Carolina Panthers and the New York Jets in the Super Bowl.
I don't think I would disagree. What I would say, though, is, Haas, do you think the Jets would have had a shot at beating Carolina? Because I don't think so.
Well, I mean, there's never ever a shot at beating Carolina. You know, I'm not going to sit here and give away my pick this early, green and white trimmer. But
right.
Joseph Fox here. Remember, you can follow us both on Twitter. Make sure you follow Amiri on Twitter, at Amiri Tilly. You can follow myself, Joseph Haas, on Twitter, at Jersey Haas. Now, Amiri, I mean, you look at this team, and we'll give a little bit away as we delve into a little bit of the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 50, San Francisco, being played out there in Santa Clara, Levi's Stadium. You got the Broncos and the Panthers, and Amiri, we've heard the reports of Peyton Manning looking very good in practice. I don't know whether to take those reports with a grain of salt or what, but we both know what we've seen of Peyton Manning in the postseason so far, and the arm strength is clearly deficient. Okay, but he's still got the wherewithal to fool defenses and call the right play at the line of scrimmage and still, get balls to where they need to get. And, he's not attacking the downfield as he once did, but he's still able to run a very potent Denver Broncos offense, and that's what they're going to need against a Carolina defense, which is really good, Amiri. But you know what? One of their weaknesses is their pass defense. I mean, you think Peyton Manning gets a couple off on the Carolina Panthers' pass defense.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's kind of been an overlooked aspect. I think a lot of the conversation has been, Cam Newton is going to destroy the Denver Broncos defense, or it'll be Cam Newton versus Denver as like a matchup that Cam Newton's favored in. Denver, the Denver Broncos quietly, not even quietly, really. I mean, they've done this consistently this year. Racked up one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the league. Fourth in points against overall. So, I mean, you're talking about a team that will stop or at least provide resistance to what Cam Newton is doing. Now, on the flip side on Carolina's end, Carolina also has a pretty nice defense. But as you mentioned, Haas, it is kind of one-sided. And I think a lot of the ways that the Carolina Panthers have won this year is by outscoring teams. Like, a lot of their games were close. They just had more points in the end. You go back to their games, they only had a couple blowouts. But they have one of the best offenses in the league. Obviously, that's their calling card. But defensively, that's a situation where you could potentially run up to some resistance from Carolina's end. So, I'm interested in seeing from that perspective what the game plan is from Denver and how you're going to attack Carolina's defense. Obviously, their run defense and their linebacker core is probably their strength at this point. But then when you get out to the edges, as you mentioned, it becomes a little fringy, becomes a little scattered. So defensively speaking, I think Carolina is a team that has its strong points of the defense. But then when you potentially work out into the outer fringes, that's where the question marks could arise. And obviously Denver certainly has receivers that I think can be potent in that respect. Do you think Denver's receivers are capable enough to kind of pervade and traverse through what Carolina is doing defensively, Haas?
That's definitely a good question. I want to get into answering that. We just want to give a snippet, just a little bit of our Super Bowl conversation.
Right.
Can't believe it. I mean, wow, just a little bit. I mean, can you believe that? We've got so much to talk about. Can't wait to get into more. I'm going to answer your question in a minute. But before we get into that, I want to keep it local just for a little while longer. I'm marrying the New York Giants. May not have made an announcement, but a former New York Giant, one I know you got to enjoy watching as a Giants fan. Justin Tuck calls it a career. 9 years with the Giants, 2 years with Oakland, he retires. Your thoughts on the great Justin Tuck?
Yeah, that was an interesting moment, obviously. Not interesting, it was a heartfelt moment, I'm sure, for a lot of Giants fans, which is interesting as far as, the fact that the way his career kind of played out at the end. Obviously him going to Oakland, and I think most Giants fans, look at his career with the utmost respect. I mean, obviously he was there with the Giants when it came to the Super Bowls, and for the most part, from everything that we saw publicly, Justin Tuck was, a great ambassador of New York Giants football. I mean, I remember when I had the great opportunity to interview him, he was doing that. Yeah, I was talking to him about something completely unrelated. Well, I was talking to him about a scholastic reading foundation that he had started here in New York City. So Justin Tuck, to me, when it comes to what he is going to be known for, he'll obviously be known for the sacks. He'll obviously be known for the Super Bowls against Tom Brady, right? That's going to be his tombstone, essentially, right, of his career. But I think what perhaps should be more highlighted in this situation is kind of the complete Justin Tuck, because he was really a great person and a great leader, obviously, in the Giants locker room when he was there. And when he went to Oakland, it was, kind of a disappointing moment, because we had grown up with Justin Tuck as Giants fans. But Obviously, nothing but the, you know, most respect for the man who's really kind of made it his career a complete one on and off the field, and done it specifically there in New York City. So definitely, you know, got to congratulate Justin Tuck on, you know, what really was Haas a great career. And I know it's a little too early, but I personally think a Hall of Fame worthy career, potentially Hall of Fame worthy career.
On a weekend where we will definitely get into the Hall of Fame selections, we'll definitely get that conversation going. Let's get a little conversation going here on the retirement of Justin Tuck. I know one gentleman who probably isn't too sad to see Justin Tuck call it a career, our good friend, producer extraordinaire, Jason Cloutier, joins us on the program. Hey, thanks for joining us this morning. And a quick thought on Justin Tuck, who, I'm, like I said, I'm pretty sure you're not weeping for his retirement right about now.
Phenomenal player to watch, except when he was sacking Tom Brady. But no, and you guys said it, for as big an impact he made on the field, he made a bigger impact on the field, and he continued it when he went out to Oakland. And if you read a lot of the younger players that Oakland has drafted the last couple of years, their remarks when he retired, it just tells you what kind of person, what kind of man he was, both on and off the field, and the impact he had on the others that he played with in the game. So, you know, that about says it all. To me, if your teammates and former teammates and players you played against when you retire come out and say great things about you, and not about what a good player you were, but just what a good person you were, that to me holds higher than anything else that people can say about you. So
Khalil Mack will be able to say he played his first two NFL seasons alongside a great player like Justin Tuck and learned from him. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. He's going to definitely have a lasting impact on that Oakland Raiders team. Jason Cloutier joining us on the program. Here's the story of, I don't want to tell you, know, I don't want to leave it. What would A-Rod say? Pink elephant in the room. Okay, Super Bowl 50. Okay, San Francisco has been a giant party. Been watching it on ESPN, been watching it on NFL Network. It's been great watching San Francisco being spotlighted the way it has. And San Francisco's easily been able to take advantage of the same thing that the New York Super Bowl was able to take advantage of 2 years ago. The fact that all of the events would take place in the prominent city closest to the stadium, and then everybody would get to the stadium on game day. So you've got everybody working hard over in the stadium area in Santa Clara. Meanwhile, all the partying and the festivities going on in San Francisco, and it looks great. So big question. New England didn't make it. Denver did make it. Now you've got it. Denver Broncos, Carolina Panthers. First, your thoughts on New England not making it, and then your thoughts on who will make it past today.
Well, the better team won. I mean, you know, you can't make excuses. The offensive line was terrible. Tom didn't have time to throw. What a great game plan by Wade Phillips. And for as good as everything was, the Patriots still had a chance to win with 12 seconds left. So,
yes.
Or at least tie. So, you know, you can't go to the Super Bowl every year. To me, I judge every season singularly. And, you know, with what they were able to accomplish with all the guys that they lost during the year, they were the most injured team in the NFL. And they made it to they made it to 12 seconds. They were 12 seconds left in the game, they could have tied the AFC Championship game. There's not another team in the NFL that could have gone through the season that they had and been that close to going to the Super Bowl.
Very, very true. Amiri, I wanted to ask one more follow-up question really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Jay, just when you look at that, now, we all understand why the Patriots had to end up going for two at the end of the game. It's because of a missed extra point by a guy who hadn't missed an extra point in I can't remember how long. Now,
10 years.
The question has to be asked: did the NFL win by moving the extra point back this season because it directly the outcome of a game that's going to give us our Super Bowl combatants? I mean, that extra point completely impacted the game. So my question to you is: did the NFL win or lose?
I think the NFL wins. The games, it should be semi-difficult to make that kick. It shouldn't be a free point. And the interesting part of the whole thing is Bill Belichick is the one who has been pushing for it to be moved back for years, and they finally acted on it.
Mm. So when it comes
suggestion to the competition committee for the last 3 or 4 years.
Right. So when it comes to the season that the Patriots had, Hassan and I were talking a little bit about how this was a year that Jets fans should look back on with some sort of regret because of the opportunity that they had to really take advantage of what was a pretty AFC conference this year. Your thoughts then on the year that the Patriots had, and obviously when you get that close, you're definitely going to regret the season, but how much of this year will Patriots fans, do you think, look back on this and be like, man, there could have been something here, or is this one of those situations where you're kind of glad it's over so you can begin to progress and move on to next year?
You know, it's hard. If you go back, and if they didn't have the injuries that they had, could they have played better? Probably. They probably would have had home field advantage. Home field advantage, they might beat Denver. You know, they don't have to deal with the crowd noise and stuff. You know, it's always hard to go back and look back. Do I think they missed out on an opportunity? Of course. They made it to the AFC Championship game. You know, anytime you get that far, you're always looking at, like, one or two things. Oh, if this play was different or if that play was different. I mean, I think the Jets did blow an opportunity because they lost that last game to Buffalo. You know, the Jets win that. Everybody talked about the Patriots losing to Miami as the last week. I think the Jets could have done something in the playoffs if they would have won that game against Buffalo. Now, would they have beaten New England in New England? Maybe not. But, you know, they have the horses to beat New England because they beat them in week 16. So, you know, I think the Jets missed out on an opportunity. I mean, like I said, I can't be disappointed as a Patriots fan. Every year we go to at least the AFC Championship game. I mean, at least they have for the last 5 years. So I'm just going to ride this until it comes crashing down on me for the good times right now.
Right, right. That's something that a few franchises can say, that they can't complain, no doubt about it, about that consistent streak of AFC Championship game appearances. So when it comes to, I guess, transitioning into today's game, 6:30, the Super Bowl between Carolina and Denver, how much of a shot do you think Denver has at being able to, and Haas and I were just discussing this as well, being able to stifle Cam Newton and the high-flying Panthers offense? What do you think about that matchup, the Denver D versus Carolina's offense, one of the more talked-about aspects of this game?
Well, I think one thing that really helped Denver in the AFC Championship game is they pretty much knew that New England was not going to run the ball. So, you know, Miller, Ware, the defensive line, they could pin their ears back and just fire off on the ball because they knew Tom was going to either be in the shotgun or drop him back, and they weren't going to allow him to have any time. The Panthers run so many different options off of each of their counter plays, running game, that Denver defense is going to have to do a lot of thinking on who to get and who to stop. And I read this week. Cam Newton is listed at 6'4", 265 pounds. The Broncos only have two defensive players, defensive end Malik Jackson and defensive end Derek Wolfe, that are that size.
Let me put this in perspective for you in terms of Cam Newton's size. And I'm sure the both of you have heard of this athlete. You're familiar with Brock Lesnar?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Do you realize Brock Lesnar, when you look at him, you see he doesn't look human. If I was going to cast a human, like if I was going to recast the Incredible Hulk TV show with Bruce Banner and like a Lou Ferrigno type Hulk, I would use Brock Lesnar as the Hulk. We both agree the man is mammoth. Do you realize that Brock Lesnar is 6'4", 265 pounds? I just wanted to put in perspective to you, like when you want to compare how big Cam Newton is at the quarterback position, and that was a great, a great stat there, Jay, but I just want people to be able to just visualize. When you visualize Brock Lesnar, you see someone that's just beyond human in terms of girth. And that's what defenders see when they see Cam Newton as the quarterback. He's not that, you know, skinny 6'3", 200-pound drop-back quarterback. No, this guy, when you go after him, could put you to the turf and run by you. So great bringing up his size, but I just wanted to be able to compare him. When you said his exact measurables, and you know, just Brock Lesnar came right to mind in terms of someone with the same exact measurables, and, you know, you just see the size.
In this game, I mean, it's going to be a great chess match between those two units. I think the biggest key to this game is the Broncos' offensive line against Carolina's defensive line and linebacker. I don't know if the Broncos' offensive line is good enough to continually stop the rush from Allen and Short and Tulele and those guys. Those guys are nasty, that defensive line. And the Broncos' offensive line is not that good. Outside of the first drive that Denver had in the AFC Championship game, they didn't do anything against New England in terms of moving the ball. Their second touchdown came off of the Brady pick inside the 20.
Mm-hmm.
But then they had
right.
And they settled for a field goal later. But, I mean, I think that defensive line is just going to beat
up the Broncos'
offensive line.
Jay, it sounds like you're pretty much – look, I'm just going to straight up ask you both. First, Amiri, and then Jay. Green and White Show, Amiri Tillich there, Joseph Fox here, Jason Cloutier joining us on the program. Producer extraordinaire, going to ask this question to both of you. First, Amiri, are we going to see Brock Osweiler in this game, yes or no?
As a last resort, probably. If the situation arose.
No, are we going to see him in the game, yes or no? I'm not talking about come in to take the victory formation snap at the end of the game.
Right.
We're going to see Brock Osweiler come in the game to take significant snaps because Peyton Manning is ineffective, yes or no?
I think so. I think we might. The only reason I'm answering this question, honestly, yes, primarily is because of what the Carolina Panthers can do defensively. And that's my concern, that over the last few games, Peyton Manning has looked very shaky at best when it comes to playing against good defenses. And Carolina is no pushover defensively. That is the reason why I would lean towards a yes, Brock Osweiler may come in. But that, I think that would have to be a catastrophe of a situation for it to come down to that. But when it comes to the reality that Carolina's defense is, I think yes, I think we could see some Brock Osweiler at some point.
Jay, up to you, 60 seconds.
I think the only way he comes in is if they have to throw a Hail Mary at the end of the game.
You think so? Okay, that would be a significant snap. You're right. That would be a significant snap. But you're putting it in a situation.
I think the defense for Denver will keep them in the game for the majority of the game. So I don't think the only reason why I think they'd bring in Osweiler is if the game was getting out of hand. And I don't think the Denver defense will allow that.
Okay, so are we going to see Brock Osweiler? Yes or no, Jay, before we get you out of here?
I don't think we'll see him because I don't think there'll be a Hail Mary at the end. And I think the Panthers win 24-13.
Woo, there you go. Prediction from Jay Kool-Aid. You know what? I know we'll see you next week to break down how this game, the results of this game, and what we'll be looking forward to coming into next season, because by next weekend the official offseason will begin. That'll be it. No more football.
No, no, no.
Can you believe it? Jay, always a pleasure having you on the program. Much appreciated. Enjoy Super Bowl Sunday, okay? Enjoy the fix. Enjoy the eat. You and the family have a great time, okay?
You too. Thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Producer extraordinaire Jason Cloutier on the program. Always comes with a very, you know, a very eclectic take as well. He gave us things to look for, gave us prediction as well. He's pulling for Carolina to win the game. We'll have our thoughts on who's going to win the game a little later in the program. But your thoughts real quickly, Amiri, and we'll continue the conversation. As you know what, I will answer your question because I did leave your question kind of hanging there. So we'll go, I'll answer your question real quick, and then we'll go into a quick Mike Fitzpatrick timeout. Now, so I think the Denver Broncos wide receivers will be able to take advantage of the Carolina Panthers secondary. First, I do believe they'll be able to find spots. They'll be able to find little nicks and cracks in the area because they're going to be really – there's going to be a lot of short passing for Peyton Manning. Both realize that he doesn't have the arm strength and maybe to go downfield, so it's going to be a lot of dinks. It's going to be a lot of dunks. So you know he's going to be able to take advantage that way. Are they going to be able to strike downfield? That's going to be all up to Peyton Manning and whether or not he's going to be able to get the ball there. The ability to get this Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout there, and there we go.
Yes, indeed. My name is Amiri Tella. The listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week over at JG Sports Talk on Twitter, as well as at Amiri Tella, AmiriTulloch.
HostileInterpretations.com under construction will be up and running soon. Yes, great articles each and every week. Right now, you can find me on Twitter 24/7 at Jersey Haas. My inbox is your inbox, so make sure you fill it up. JosephHaasNFL@gmail.com. And this Sunday and every Sunday, Amiri, they can always find us Sundays 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for the Green and White Show. He's always there. I'm always here. We're always bringing you the latest in sports talk, both Jets, Giants, and all things NFL and pretty much all sports. So let's continue. We'll get into the rush report with our good friend, the Reverend Ralph Mantini, who I'm sure is getting prepared for a Super Bowl Sunday. Reverend Ralph, what up, man?
Hey, happy Super Bowl Sunday, guys.
Yes. There should be streamers. There should be, we celebrate other things by having parades. You know, if this was some sort of, you know, I know the Chinese New Year is coming up or is around now. So there's going to be a lot of dancing, a bounce. Why can't we just have a parade in the city where just cheerleaders go down the street, full dress? Okay. Maybe I'm carrying this a little too far, but I'm enjoying Super Bowl Sunday, as is everybody here. Reverend Ralph, man, you saw the conference championship games. We saw Carolina get out to another great start. They've been getting out to great starts in games pretty much, to end the season here. So no surprise there. What was a little surprising was the way the Denver Broncos were able to take out the New England Patriots. A lot of people had the Patriots winning that game. So first and foremost, your thoughts on the results from last weekend?
Well, it did surprise me. I did not picture Denver winning that game. And, you know, if that game would have went on for another, 2 minutes, I think New England would have probably came away with the victory. But give kudos to that Denver Broncos defense. They did a great job. They absolutely dominated the Patriots offensive line. And I think that's where the game was won. So this week, it's going to be a different kettle of fish for the Denver Broncos. I think they have to they pretty much have to play the same way they've played the past couple of weeks, in that they've done a good job by not turning over the ball. Peyton Manning, I think the best thing we could say about him during this playoff run is he hasn't thrown any interceptions. He's been playing it safe. Making good, safe passes. But, I think this week what he needs to do is he's got to rely on that running game. And that's the one thing that worries me a bit about the Broncos, and that they really didn't do a good job running the ball against the Patriots. Outside of one 30-yard run, I remember, by C.J. Anderson, they really didn't do much in that department. And so I think, it's foolish to really expect Peyton Manning to throw the ball 45 times and be successful in this game. I think that, he's going to – if they run the ball the way they should run the ball, if they can rely on C.J. Anderson in particular, and the offensive line does a good job, I think that, Peyton Manning will pick his spots and he will, hit some, 25, 20-yard passes. But I don't think it's the type of game where, you line up Peyton Manning in shotgun and expect him to throw the ball 45 times a game. I don't think he's that type of quarterback anymore, and I think the Carolina Panthers have too good of a defense to allow him to do that.
Well, one of the questions I did want to ask in terms of the Carolina Panthers defense is, we spoke about it a little bit earlier in the program. The Carolina pass defense, yes, Josh Norman's on the team and all, but has been a little suspect, and it's something that you're not hearing a lot of people talk about. What I have noticed is I'm seeing a lot of people actually picking Denver to win the game, whether it's, storybook ending effect or otherwise. I'm starting to see a lot of people pick the, 5.5 point underdog here and really ride with them. So My question to you is, even though Peyton Manning, and we're all going to admit he's limited in the passing game, is he still going to be able with some short passes to pretty much effectively carve up the Carolina Panthers secondary?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, you know, he's going to be able to connect with his tight ends over the middle. You did mention that the Panthers do have some they are sort of vulnerable, especially at the safety position, I would say. But again, you know, just because he's going to be able to connect on some short passes, does that mean he's going to be able to score a lot of points? I think it all depends on the running game. If the running game is there for Denver, I think that opens up a lot of things for Peyton Manning. And I think a lot of those patterns that he's going to be hoping that he's going to, you know, hope to develop during the game, I think that's really going to be the question here. Are they going to be able to run the ball? Could the game be close? I think it will be a relatively close game. I really don't picture a blowout. I think a lot of things have to go right for Denver to win this game. I'm not saying it's impossible. I just don't picture it. I mean, the way the Panthers are playing now, they're a red-hot team. I didn't predict them to really blow out Arizona, and they did. So, but, you know, the one thing that you can say about Denver is they had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. They have a great coaching staff. Maybe that kind of plays in their favor. Peyton Manning is a coach on the field. Give him an extra week to prepare for the game, and maybe, you know, that creates some sort of advantage. But I think overall, I do like Carolina in this game. I think Denver will make it a great game. They will be competitive. I could see Carolina winning by a score of maybe, 27-20 or 27-23, that type of ball game.
Okay. Both those scores very, very different, by the way. Your first score gives people who take Carolina a definite win. Your second score would mean that people would need to take the Denver Broncos in order to win there. Let's not forget that element as well, always a part of the NFL.
Sure.
Reverend Ralph Mancini joining us here on the program, a Super Bowl Sunday. I'm Eric Tillett there, Joseph Hobbs here, Green and White Show. Real quickly now, Cam Newton, Peyton Manning, our quarterback comparisons, we both have to congratulate, and we all have to congratulate Cam Newton on being awarded the MVP award for this season. We all pretty much knew he had that wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're looking at soon-to-be Hall of Famer Peyton Manning, up-and-coming superstar quarterback Cam Newton. I'm calling this one Bat Manning versus Super Cam, just to go along with the flow there. So who do you think is going to win, Bat Manning or Super Cam, in terms of individual matchups now? Who's going to be able to blow it up stat-wise? Not whose team's going to win the game. Who's going to end up with the better stat?
Oh, good question. I'm gonna give it to Super Cam just because he gains a lot of, he generates a lot of yardage with his legs. And I think that's going to put him over the top. I think I could see him rushing for a touchdown and probably throwing a couple of scores. So I think the fact that he does run the ball a lot, and he is effective doing that, I think that's going to put him over the top.
Batman and getting no love. Mary, did you know Batman was my favorite comic book character? At least one of them. Like, he's one of my really, really favorite comic book characters. And the reason why... is because all those others, I mean, a whole lot of the others, I mean, they have advantages. I mean, come on. Wolverine, you can't kill that guy. Superman, you can't kill that guy. Unless you get a rock from a planet that basically doesn't exist anymore. Okay? So, I mean, really, it's really hard to kill. Batman is just a person. We're using his wit and a lot of clever tools and things like that. So that's kind of why I like Batman in this. Now, what Manning is going to have to do in this game is use his wit and a lot of clever tools in order to get anywhere near past the Carolina Panthers defense in this game, you guys see what I did there, right? I could just rewind and do that one again. No, but in order to get past this Carolina defense, which is going to feature a strong pass rush, and even though they're not as tight in the secondary as we've been discussing today, they're still going to be able to impact Peyton Manning in the backfield. So he's not going to have an easy time stepping back and throwing the ball. This is going to be a difficult time for Mr. Bat Manning. Amiri, your thoughts on whether Manning is going to have himself an easy day or a very hard day under center?
They've got Carolina, as he said, they've got a good defensive line. And in particular, that interior is very strong between Kawan Short and Star Lotulelei. I mean, those guys are not going to be easy to block. And so if Carolina jumps out to a 10-point lead, let's just say, then Peyton Manning is going to be on his heels. He's going to be forced to throw. It all depends on game flow. You know, if Denver is allowed to play this game conservatively, where they don't need to put up points and in a hurry, I should say, I think Denver should be able to move the ball in this game, but it all depends on game flow. If Carolina jumps out to one of those early leads, whether it be 10-0, 13-0, 14-0, then I think Denver will be in trouble.
I'll say, let me ask a question.
A little technical difficulty there with Amiri's mic. We'll get him back and where we can hear him in a second. But quick question on the rest of the game flow as well. Okay, so, you know, I'm looking generally in terms of, okay, it's not like fantasy time or anything like that. I mean, you know, stats aren't really going to matter to win somebody. But, you know, you've got those one-day fantasy leagues. You know, you've got the DraftKings. You know, you've got those like that. So you're looking for places where you can set up a lineup and then you can win a matchup. Okay, so are you out there and are you going, Peyton Manning's going to have to get this, is going to have to be able to throw the ball in order for the Broncos to win. So I'm going to look at Emmanuel Sanders. Or is it, wow, I've got to really take the Panthers running game, because if the Panthers are controlling the game like they like to, it's going to be Cam Newton on the ball. It's going to be Stewart on the ball. And they're both going to be on the ball running the football more than throwing the football. It's amazing how in this day and age of football, football's being thrown 40 times a game and quarterbacks throwing for, 400 yards routinely, that we both know in this game that unless something crazy happens, neither of these quarterbacks are going to throw for 300 to 400 yards, and neither of these quarterbacks are going to throw 30 to 35 to 40 balls. Is it just me? Am I the only one that sees that? So for a fantasy kind of angle, Reverend Ralph, what are you thinking?
The fantasy angle is, I think if everything goes the way that Carolina wants it to go, I don't think Cam Newton is going to throw for 300 plus yards. I think he'll, he's good for about 250. I would say, 240 to 250, somewhere in that area. And he's probably going to gain about 50 yards, 50 to 60 yards on the ground and rush for a touchdown. So I think, if everything goes according to plan, I don't think Cam Newton is going to need to put up any crazy stats. As for Peyton Manning, if he's playing from behind, he probably will throw one or two interceptions, but he will put up yardage. He will be dinking and dunking his way down the field. I think if Carolina does, build a significant lead, I think they will give him a lot of those receptions, playing sort of like in prevent mode where, they won't want Denver to score, but they will give up a lot of those 10 to 12 yard throws. So I could see Peyton Manning maybe, throwing for anywhere between 280 to 300 if it turns out to be the game that I expect it to be, where once again Carolina jumps out to the lead and Manning has to throw the ball. If you have to pick between one of the two, I would still go with Cam, just because I think I expect them, to to rush for a touchdown. I expect him to gain those yards through the ground, and I expect him to throw for at least 250, I would say. Whereas Peyton Manning, yeah, he might throw for more yards, but he's also going to turn over the ball if he's forced to play from behind.
Never a fumble. Oh, okay. Mary, back with us. How's the mic working? Let's see if we can hear you.
Hopefully a little bit better. I had a quick question for Bruce. I think it's an interesting conversation, but how much do you think the aspect of Peyton Manning's last ride?
I can hear the mic is kind of breaking up, but I can hear Amiri's question. I think what he's asking is, what is the impact of this being Peyton Manning's last ride, or you know, his last hurrah, his last game? Does that have an impact on the game at all, from either perspective?
I think the impact is huge. The fact that it is his last game, the fact that a lot of people do expect him to retire, that's going to provide a lot of motivation for the Broncos in general, for the players. Let's face it, in the NFL, half the battle is motivating these guys, and we see it each and every week. There's always one team that's not quite as motivated to play, and usually that team loses. So I think that the Broncos are going to be extra motivated, and that's why I think it should be a pretty competitive game. A pretty competitive game, in that I don't see Carolina blowing them out by 20 points. I think that's going to play a huge factor. Football's a rough sport. If you could find any way to motivate these guys to play and to hit each other, and to just give their all and just to dive on balls and do whatever it takes, I think, yeah, that's huge. The fact that, Peyton Manning will, most probably be playing his last game.
What I don't understand is why everybody seems to be so afraid of what we're all of our eyes have been telling us this is going to end up doing. Okay, we're going to end up seeing a game, all right? We're going to end up seeing a game, and I believe this is one of the scenarios that could truly happen, and that we're not talking about, where the Carolina Panthers jump out to an extraordinary lead, as they have pretty recently. They jumped out to a 4-5 score lead, whether it be, three touchdowns and a couple of field goals. I mean, they really, come out and put it on the Broncos. And I want to see if Gary Kubiak, if Coach Kubiak is going to be able to make the hard decision. He was a backup quarterback. Is he going to be able to make the decision to take out Peyton Manning and put in Brock Osweiler, if Osweiler is the guy who gives them a chance of winning at that point? Okay, at that point where they're down, is it okay to take out the future Hall of Famer in the middle of the second quarter when you're down 31-0 with 6 minutes left in the second quarter? That's what I mean. I don't. Not that I'm wanting to see that. I'm just wondering how everybody would react to that.
Well, you mentioned 31-0. If it's 31-0, I could see that maybe happening. Yes, that is a possibility. But if it's 20-10 in the fourth quarter, if it's 24-14, that's not happening. That's not happening.
No, of course not. I'm not talking about a game. Yeah. I'm talking about, hey, look, it's 21-0, first quarter's about to end, and you're looking, and Peyton Manning's already thrown one pick six, and he's 3-10 for 31 yards and has no zip on the fastball. Okay, you want to win this football game, and there's still an opportunity to win this football game by making a change at quarterback. Are you able to sit the Hall of Fame quarterback and bring in a guy who can give you a chance to win? That's the question I'm asking.
Yeah, well, if they're getting blown out and they're in the fourth quarter now, not in the first quarter, but if they're in the fourth quarter, then, yeah, I could picture Brock Osweiler coming in.
Okay, so you're saying that in my scenario, they won't do it. They'll let Peyton Manning ride it out the first couple of quarters, no matter what.
Yes.
Okay.
I think they owe it to him because, he's taken them here.
Yeah, but that's not that's putting the – there are 52 other guys in uniform who the team owes it to be competitive in a football game. That's why I'm looking at all of the sentiment online. I'm looking at the sentiment – Amir Tillis back with us as well. The sentiment online as well with how people are starting to choose Denver to win this football game. And I'm looking and I'm listening and I'm like, yeah, people want this storybook ending. But if there's still a chance for the Denver Broncos to win the football game, and that's, hey, it's 21-0 early – Peyton's giving me nothing. I've got a stud 6'7" quarterback sitting back there who's warmed up, who I know can get the ball down the field and run my offense. Why don't you make the change in the first quarter and give everybody else on that team an opportunity to win the game?
So you're telling me if Peyton Manning makes one mistake, throws one pick six, that you're just going to pull the plug on him?
No, I'm saying if it's 21-0, he's 3 for 10 for 34 yards, and one of his four completions is to the other jersey where he runs it back for a touchdown, I'm strongly considering what he does on his next drive is strongly going to influence my thinking of who's under center for the drive after that. Yes.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. I don't disagree with you. I mean, I would certainly consider that. I don't think Kubiak is going to do that in the first half. Now, if they're just playing poorly and mm-hmm. Peyton Manning's not providing any spark, if he just doesn't have it, I think maybe, yeah, in the second half, I could see that happening. But I don't think it's going to happen early. I don't think it's going to happen in the first quarter. I don't think it's going to happen in the second quarter.
Well, I know that someone who always brings it, all right, never need the backup quarterback, always a starter when he comes and joins us on the program, Reverend Ralph Mantini. Yo, man, enjoy us. Just enjoy a great Super Bowl Sunday. It's our last NFL Sunday of the season. It's been a great season having you on with your analysis as well. Always love the spirited conversations. Much appreciated, and I'll catch you again next week, my man.
Guys, it's been a blast. Enjoy.
Thanks again.
Always. Always a pleasure when we have Reverend Ralph Mancini on the program with us. Green and White Show, Mary Tillich there, Joseph Haas here at Mary Tillich.
Yes, I think.
yes, working, yes, we hear you fine. You know what, just in time, too. You know, we had a little sprinkle, had a little dusting out here in the Northeast, had a little weather, but it's always good when we can have some a little frozen pond action. And, of course, with the All-Star game for the NHL, we've always got time for ice time with Amiri. So before we get ice time started, Amiri, got to ask you a question on the format of the All-Star game, whether you liked it or not, as well
yeah.
as the All-Star game MVP. Can you believe the story of John Scott? I mean, come on.
The story of John Scott really made, I think, everybody's All-Star weekend because, you know, it was prefacing weeks, for the weeks in advance, I guess. The conversation was, why was the NFL trying to stop John Scott from playing in the All-Star game? He is,
yeah.
for those that might not be as well-versed, Haas, he's basically a fighter, essentially. That's his main occupation, I guess, on the hockey ice. But when it comes to his skills on the ice, he's not necessarily an All-Star skilled player, but some fan wrote his name in, and it kind of started a movement, and everybody was on point, and the NHL tried various means, very disrespectful means, in my opinion, just, you know, sending him to the AHL, which is like the minor leagues, so he wouldn't have as much of a platform. So just a lot of sketchy behavior from the NHL, and it definitely worked out, Haas, because to be honest, I think a lot of people watched that All-Star game, the All-Star tournament, I guess, to be more precise, because of John Scott, and because of kind of the story that it developed into. And as the tournament blossomed on, as the 3-on-3 pond hockey style tournament blossomed on, you know, we saw a lot of John Scott, and his impact was pretty tangible on his team's winning, and obviously, as you mentioned,
yeah,
he ultimately
goals,
got the MVP.
Right?
So yes, it was yeah,
goals.
Exactly.
Here's a guy.
Picture perfect.
Here's a guy who he fights. I mean, he's not really, you know, you don't put him on the ice in the power play. You know, he's not the guy you go out there and say, okay, I'm drawing up a play to get John Scott the puck in open ice. That's not what you do. And he goes out there in open ice and is able to put tally too. So that's a great story, man.
It really was. And I think that kind of encapsulated, I guess, what the NHL's All-Star weekend was like, I guess. It was a very productive weekend, I think, from the NHL's perspective. Obviously, you had the skills competition, which is always a big event, which is always kind of, a topic of conversation.
Yeah.
And when it comes to honestly, I've been saying this, you know, and I totally agree. I think when it comes to what the NHL does, because of the fact that it's just such a skill-intensive sport, and because
mm-hmm.
you have so many, like, genuinely good players,
right.
And because of the venue that it is, it's such an advantage that the NHL has, that no doubt about it, as far as their ability to kind of take advantage of their skills has.
Hey, Amiri, I just wanted to put a cherry on top of the John Scott story. I don't know if you knew this little tidbit at the end of the John Scott story, but, you know, in the beginning of the week, he's the All-Star MVP, and he scores two goals in the game. Scoring two goals in the game for a guy who doesn't score at all. And, of course, I don't know if you know about this, but at the end of the week, his wife gave birth to twins. So he's a proud father now of two twins and of a set of twins. And just, you know, what a week for John Scott. Can you believe that? Like, what a week for a guy. You know, you do what what no one believes you could do. And you know, you win the All-Star Game MVP. And then, you know, you're able to bless your family with twins as well. So what a weekend for John Scott. Okay, so the three-on-three format, you think it's a keeper?
I think so. I think it was one of the better All-Star games we've seen in a while. And I think what was good about it is the fact that the NHL put $1 million on the championship, which actually made it very worthwhile for a lot of the players. And I think that's a method that a lot of leagues can kind of copy and steal. Make put some incentives on it, right? Like, if obviously the players are in it, like we saw with the Pro Bowl, which was going on the same evening, right? Like, if you put an incentive on it, it increases the competition. We saw that in that last game, that last three-on-three tournament between the two divisions.
Right.
It was intense and it was low scoring. So I think that's what the NHL succeeded in as far as being able to captivate, the fan. And I certainly think that's something that should be echoed across sports. Make an incentive laden aspect of it, and then, you know, move on from there.
Major League Baseball would say they've already made their game incentive laden, but I definitely don't agree with. I mean, as it did sound cool at the time, and it was like a cool kind of novelty thing, it to see how an exhibition game can impact the actual regular games. You know, I'm not really a fan of that. So, moving right along from a positive John story to a very negative John story, which has been developing over the past week. I can't really call him Johnny Football anymore, which I loved calling him, because football is not going to be his career for a very long time. I'm talking about Johnny Manziel. And, you know, what I really thought was, and as I was drafting this story during the week, I was very surprised that with the details that came out about what happened with Johnny Manziel, how there were no charges being filed and no police inquiry. Well, as of Friday, we realized that has changed, Amiri, and, you know, there is going to be an inquiry by the Dallas police into the allegations by Johnny Manziel's ex-girlfriend, allegations of him roughing her up, hitting her, throwing her, and forcing her into an automobile and saying some pretty damning things about, you know, I'm going to kill myself or kill you or kill us both. And, you know, just really destructive behavior from Johnny Manziel, something that he's been pretty much doing since, you know, had Johnny Manziel in the spotlight, Amiri. It's kind of, you know, it went from a kind of this, you know, party boy college kid story to let's see what he can do in the pros story to just a really, really sad story to see if this guy can really, you know, pull himself out of whatever funk he's been in.
Yeah, you know, I think that you tapped it on the head right there with the introduction. I mean, I think, you know, when it comes to his football skill, that's like been put on the back burner. But, you know, the sad thing is that's been put on the back burner for a while. You know, Johnny Manziel has had multiple chances, and, you know, there's been multiple moments kind of over the last few years since he was, you know, in college really, and also now obviously in the pros, where there has been moments for him to kind of take that step back and you know, look at things from a perspective where football is not the end-all be-all. But we haven't seen that transpire, and we haven't seen that consistent change. And, you know, there's always been the talk of from Johnny Manziel of, oh, I'm going to change my ways, and I'm going to be different, and I'm going to improve myself as a human being. But until we get a chance to really see it unfold consistently, I don't think football is at this point in time, you mentioned it, football is definitely not the concern for Johnny Manziel at this point. I think it's just trying to get his life in order. And I think if you are, you know, if you are the Cleveland Browns or you're a team that's looking at him potentially, I think at this point, if you even consider Johnny Manziel, you have to consider the fact that this man needs help from a standpoint of off field. And I think I'm not anybody who can direct him to that sort of help, or if that's a external help or just internal help from him, you know, from Johnny Manziel. I don't know what the precise solution is, but what has happened, I guess, since his arrival into the spotlight has kind of destructed, as you mentioned, his whether that's his personality beforehand or brought it to fruition in the national spotlight, but his personality, his just kind of destructive personality, as you mentioned, has really affected the way that his entire life has kind of played out, to be honest.
I'm going to tell you something now, Amiri. Just as a young man, I want you to be ready for many more athletes like this. Some that you'll see that will be rising stars, and you'll wonder how and why it can go so wrong with things off the field. Let's get into the Vince Youngs of the world. Let's even go further back into the Lawrence Phillips of the world, the Ryan Leafs of the world. I've seen some very talented football players throw it all away. And those are just the ones that were very, very famous. I've seen not-so-famous stars throw it away as well. So we try not to throw away any of the time we have here on the program. So we'll get right into the talk of the next hour. That's right, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Green and White, Jean-Marie Tulloch there. Joseph Haas here. Guess what? We're going to talk a little MMA, a little UFC, get everybody updated on what went on last night, as well as a little bit more in the fight game. We're going to be joined by our good friend, Brian Benway. Brian, make sure you follow him on Twitter, by the way. That's at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I, folks. So without any further ado, with his own take on the world in sports, Brian, what up, yo?
Gentlemen, good morning. You made me depressed talking about all those football players that kind of ruined their careers, but now I'm here to bring up the mood.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about a few players. Well, okay, we're going to definitely bring up the mood with the guy who I know you know, and a guy who's very charismatic, and talking about the ability to sell a fight and his ability to just be an extrovert, and also, you know, to be able to give you a good description, a good self analysis as well as analysis on his opponent. I'm talking about Mike Jackson. You're a good buddy. Good to see him on the card last night, Fight Night 82. Tell your buddy, okay, that out of the entire which was going to be a pay per view event. At least his was one of the only fights that was pay-per-view yesterday.
Yeah, it didn't last very long, though, did it? Did you watch your fight?
Well,
I was really disappointed. But the backstory is, believe it or not, Mike Jackson, and you know this, Oz, because you're a UFC fan like I am, and I covered it for a long time. Mike Jackson was actually my intern when I worked at Yahoo Sports Radio in Houston. So back then, he was at the University of Houston finishing up his degree, and he was my intern on my sports talk show. So here I am. I've got a guy who, he's huge. I mean, you saw him. He's over 6 foot. He's 175 pounds, very charismatic. So back in the day, I'm kind of giving him tasks to do to help us prepare the show. We had a five-hour show back then. From 1 a.m. Eastern to 6 a.m. Eastern, we had the overnight show, and he was there hanging with me, getting stuff ready for the show. And at the time, he was fighting in Houston mainly. Sometimes he'd fight boxing. Sometimes he'd do mixed martial arts. But the dude was a badass even back then. He has a great following in Houston, and we've kept close. Whenever he comes to San Antonio, where I live now, we hang out. I'm actually going to be in Houston in a week and a half. We're hopefully going to get together. Now that he's famous and a UFC fighter, I hope he has time for me in a week and a half. But so as you know, he was fighting Mickey Gall last night on the pay-per-view part, UFC Fight Pass, which, by the way, you could get a free preview for a week last night. So I got the free preview, watched his fight. He tapped in a minute. He got hit early in the fight. And he got taken down and he tapped, so I was kind of disappointed. So I think I had the shortest UFC Fight Pass subscription ever. I signed up for it right before Mike's fight. He lost in a minute, and then I canceled my subscription because I was like, well, no need to get UFC Fight Pass anymore because my guy probably, you know, won't fight for a while. So, but, you know, I sent him a text and said, hey, no matter what, you are still a badass to me. I am 5'10". I'm 160 pounds. I'm a skinny white kid. I said, you are still way more of a badass than I will ever be to fight in the UFC. So my hat's off to him. He's a great cat. Hopefully he maybe gets another chance down the road, but no matter what, he's a great dude. He's a badass. I'm very happy that he actually got a chance last night.
You know what? With his charisma and his ability to you know, just be able to, you know, be out and up front with a fight and, you know, his ability to also give analysis as well. I loved his repartee. I loved his back and forth as well. So I think that he'll at least get one more shot. I think there'll at least be one more shot in his future. So, you know, I'd be looking forward and be pulling for him to get a win as well in that next shot. But there'll be one more athlete out there that they'll want to, you know, run him by. And I really wanted to see what a lot more of his stand-up game was. I wanted to see a lot more of his ability. Didn't get a chance to see that, but I think we'll at least have one more shot. Now, real quickly, the winner of that fight was to face CM Punk, a former WWE wrestler now becoming an MMA fighter, and you're starting to see that a lot. Don't worry, we're going to get to the main event in a little bit. But I just wanted your thoughts on some of the, I mean, this isn't Brock Lesnar. I mean, this is a guy who's learning a lot more than he already has the skill in. How do you feel about these guys trying to glom on some of the MMA success by bringing in some WWE quote-unquote street cred?
Well, the big difference, like you mentioned with Brock Lesnar and CM Punk, is Lesnar grew up a natural wrestler. I mean, he was a wrestler in high school. He was a state champion. He was an NCAA champion. I believe he went to the University of Minnesota. And then he goes in WWE back then, has a hellacious career, does a great job, then goes into the UFC, becomes the champion. Then he had to leave the UFC because of some illness. Now he's back in the WWE. CM Punk, to me, I don't think he's as tough. I don't think he has the grasp of how you need to win these fights. I personally think, now CM Punk might surprise us, and he might actually be a good UFC fighter, but I think we're going to see Mickey Gall take it to CM Punk when we get to actually watch that fight here in a few months. Now, I don't discourage guys from trying to make the jump over. That's kind of like from the business world into the teaching world. So if you've been a business for 30 years and you've built businesses and you jump over to be a professor at a college, I don't believe for trying to teach players like that, but you have to wonder how good CM Punk is going to be in the actual hand-to-hand combat. Now, if you're a wrestler, and I used to be a wrestler as well, like they do in WWE, you have to know it's real. You get hit. You have to take bumps. There's pain there, but it's in UFC, you don't know when some dude's going to knock the kick or something like that. So you really don't know what's going to happen. But I think Mickey Gall's going to take it to the house. I think he's going to beat CM Punk whenever we get to see that fight.
CM will be punked out of the UFC, as Brian makes the prediction, and I definitely agree. It will be a very huge upset if CM Punk's able to get Gall out of that fight. Now, Hendricks versus Wonderboy Thompson. This was an outstanding fight for Thompson. I mean, you look at his ability. I love his length. I love the way he can keep people off of him. I thought Hendricks was going to try to get inside and really pit bull him, really show him, you know, show him the mat. You got to keep a guy like that off of his feet, because on his feet, he's pretty much one of the most dangerous fighters in the UFC. And he proved that again last night. First round KO of a guy who, I mean, he's only lost four or five UFC fights. And I mean, he's up there. He's got a great record, 17-4, 17-5, something like that. And he's taken out some of the great UFC fighters that we've seen. I mean, he's had epic fights with Robbie Lawler as well that we all know about. But to see Wonderboy Thompson come away with a victory, and not just, you know, a one stylistic type fight, but he was able to switch stances and show that he's not just able to land the kick as a jab, but to use the kick as a forceful, as a weapon, just as strong as a punch. And I was just very impressed by his performance.
Yeah, you mentioned Hendricks. I was actually covering two or three of his big fights when he was first coming up in the UFC. I actually, I think it was UFC 162. Somewhere in my dresser, I've got a UFC 162 media shirt with Johnny Hendricks on it from when I covered his championship fight. When he first won the championship a couple of years ago, I actually have some of that swag. And you're right, Hendricks is one of those guys where he came up and he was fantastic. Now, he's still a great fighter. I'm not saying that he's not, but when he came up very quickly. He's an Oklahoman. He comes from, you know, the countryside, and he's a tough guy growing up. And then you've got Thompson, who I honestly didn't know a whole lot about. He's one of these guys that has, you know, came up and has made a name for himself maybe a little bit more quietly. I saw him on an undercard a couple of years ago, but I haven't really watched him a whole lot in the last couple of years. But I was pretty impressed with him. He's quick, like you mentioned. He's great on his feet, and you saw the knockout last night. Holy cow, when you can have a quick knockout like that and you have striking power to come out of nowhere, that's a really – you know, it kind of reminded me of Manny Pacquiao in several years ago, back when he was in it, because you didn't really know – at times when Pacquiao was going to come to the blue and give you a flurry as well. So that kind of reminded me of him kind of crossing over into the pocket chatter. But that was fun to watch. I watched, and you know, it didn't last very long, like my boy The Truth's fight. But you look at it, and it was great to watch. It was great to be on free television, too, when, you know, we're talking about what boxing does on NBC, what UFC does night before. You've got a lot of people that are in bars hanging out the night before the Super Bowl. You've got people that are watching the NBA, the Warriors, and OKC. They're flipping through the channels, and they see UFC on Fox for free the night before the Super Bowl. That's pretty smart. They continue to do smart things marketing-wise, and I think they did a bang-up job with their performance and with their presentation of that event last night.
Fox Sports as well as Fox. As well as FS1 airing the prelims, as well as UFC Fight Pass airing a couple of prelim fights as well. Great show by the UFC. This was supposed to be a pay-per-view event in Vegas. The headlines, Velasquez and Verdun both bow out because of injury. They were able to scramble, put this together, and still get themselves an outstanding fight card, an outstanding time every time he joined us. I can't believe we're not going to get to some football. Are you kidding me? Super Bowl, Broncos, Panthers. Quick, Brian, what's your – who are you taking?
Well, the spread is 5.5. If we're going to kind of stick to the Vegas theme today, since it was last night in Vegas, the spread's 5.5. I don't see any way the Panthers do not win this game today. I think Cam Newton shreds the offense. I'm going to go with the Panthers at least by 10 points, I think, today. And I think the Carolina defense shuts down the Denver offense. So I go Carolina, your Super Bowl 50 champions, by at least 10 points today.
There you go, Brian Benway, making sure you put your shekels on the right team. Always appreciate you joining us. Can't wait to talk some more UFC. Come on, man, we've got UFC Fight Night 83 coming up soon. You know, we've got another UFC event. They've already announced who's going to be some of the headliners. You know, we've got Conor McGregor fighting. We've got Holly Holm fighting. So we've got a lot to talk about, Brian. We can't wait to have you back on the program. Always appreciate it. Enjoy.
I didn't get to talk to Amiri today. Amiri, have a fun Super Bowl, my man.
Yeah, Amiri was. We did a lot of fighting. You know how I'm fight game. So he was just like yada yada. You know, he says he's got like a nail filing clippers. He gets into the nail filing thing. He sits back. He trims the nails a little bit while we talk fight.
He's just hanging there, reading a book or something, just chilling.
No, he's up in his score. He's playing like TV Challenge or something. He's got one of those cool apps on his phone. You know, Amir, he's got like the iPhone 20, you know.
He'd be doing like push-ups and sit-ups, you know. We just talked for 10. He could do like 10 minutes of sit-ups and push-ups, I guess.
He's got the iPhone that works out for you. He's just sitting there and saying it just works out for you. You know, he's got the belfry. He's got the little strap around his wrist. And it's like, okay, what would you like to do today? My abs feel a little. Okay, 20 sit-ups. And that's it. Yeah, you know, the iPhone 20 coming out soon. Steve Jobs, I hope you didn't take that one from me.
I got to look that up. Right. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the Super Bowl.
Have a good one, buddy. Take care.
You too.
Later, guys.
Always a pleasure having Brian Benway on the program with us. So, Amiri, really, the iPhone 20, that's what you got working over there?
I'm still stuck on the 4S.
Get out. Oh, we got we got a Beyonce now. We got to upgrade your homie. No. Okay, green and white, Joe. He did just say that. A very talented Joseph Foss here. Can't wait to get into the final guest of the program. I can't believe it. I mean, it's a Super Bowl Sunday. We've been having an outstanding time here, but you know what? It's about that time for some news and nuggets, so we're going to get Phoebe to join us on the program all the way from the West Coast to give us that up close and personal. This is as up close as we're getting to the Super Bowl. So, Phoebe, showing some love. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing this morning?
Awesome show so far. We're doing great. Make sure you follow on Twitter at Never Complacent. Again, love the handle. Okay, so NFL news notes, Super Bowl 50, San Francisco, the big winner. The city has looked outstanding on television, hosting the events. You've heard nothing but great things from the correspondents as well. So before I actually get into the actual game, let me ask you a question. Do you think Seattle is ready to host the Super Bowl?
I would love that. I don't know if what the requirement, though, is in regards to how much seats you have to have. Don't you have to have a minimum requirement? I don't know if they have enough seats allowable to be considered.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough room in that stadium for some expansion. You know, you guys have that whole domed kind of effect going. I mean, if you guys filled in a few areas, I'm sure we're just expanding.
They've added some seats this year. So, I mean, I think if they're able to manage a few more, I think they'll finally be there to be considered for
position. But away from the stadium, I understand the interest. I was talking about the city, the infrastructure. Is it going to be one that can handle one? I mean, you know, Jacksonville hosted a Super Bowl not too long ago.
Absolutely.
Indianapolis hosted a Super Bowl not too long ago. People talked about the infrastructure and it not being able to maintain it. Meanwhile, you know, you go to a San Francisco, you go to New York. These are cities with infrastructures that are able to handle mass and large amounts of people just descending on a city. You know, some say maybe New York didn't do it as well as maybe San Francisco is doing it now, but do you think Seattle would be able to handle it infrastructure-wise, be able to host the events, house the people, and also put on a great show?
Without a doubt. Even in a small span of time, just watching what they even did when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. I don't know if you guys saw the footage of how many people were there. There was a lot of structure that needed to be there in order to make sure that the city was safe, that there was that the flow was easy. Aside from that, honestly, Seattle's one of the best places for just experiences. There's so many things people can do to amuse themselves in Seattle. There's so much to do. So not only is there enough hotels, enough attractions, this is a place where they can go during the time that they're there. Obviously, they're going to be enjoying the festivities, but they can have times where they can just drive a little ways and they're already in nature, and you can go in a few minutes and you're in the heart of the city. So there's so many wonderful things about Seattle. I hope that we get to a point where there's enough seats in the stadium that they would consider it. It would be an amazing experience over here. I know sometimes people have talked about exactly what you said, that some cities haven't been able to handle it, but I think Seattle would be absolutely ready for it and would love it.
So when it comes to this Super Bowl 50, what's the feeling like then on the West Coast? I know you're a little closer than Haas and I, but not exactly as close as the people literally in San Francisco. But what is the feeling in general on the West Coast about this Super Bowl and the pulse, I guess, right now?
Well, obviously, because I am in Seattle, there isn't really the excitement there because we would like to be in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
but
yeah, right. Yeah.
Seattle and
San Francisco don't really get along that well. So if San Francisco's doing well, Seattle's kind of, you know, gritting their teeth. You know, they're kind of, you know, a little extra shot of something in the espresso this morning. You know, the Pete's coffee's maybe not as great as it would normally taste. Do I have that about right?
That's true. I mean, we're hoping that it'll come back to that. After Harbaugh left, there really hasn't been as much of a fire there. Who knows what Chip Kelly will do. But as for the field, obviously this should be a
you
great game.
You see what she did there. You see what she did there, right, Mary? You see what she did there, right? She just poked me a little bit and decided to just keep on going. All right. Okay, I got you. I see you. All right.
I'm just saying, it hasn't been a really competitive time right now. Here's my problem with what San Francisco did. If you're going to fire someone who has been as successful as Harbaugh was, you better have a plan. And I remember hearing those interviews, And they had zero plan. I said, I can't believe they fired this guy, and they don't know what they're doing next. And I felt like this year proved they had no idea what they were doing next. And so if you're going to fire a guy, have a backup plan, or you're going to create a team that looks like what they ended up looking like. So
Green and White Show, Mary Tillich there, Joseph Oz here, Phoebe joining us on the program. And we're going to stick to Super Bowl 50 as we continue our conversation. And she's completely destroying my team, which she has every right to. I mean, come on, guys. If you're going to fire somebody, that's what I never understood about what the Giants were doing. Oh, did you see what I did there, Amiri? If you're going to fire somebody, know who's going to be the next coach. And since they already knew who the next coach was going to be, okay, New York, I get it. It took a little bit. That's fine. But San Francisco, if you're going to fire a guy, you got to know who the next coach is going to be. And I'm glad that at least now there's going to be a plan. There's going to be someone who's going to move this in a direction. Some people don't like the Chip Kelly thing. I, in fact, wanted the Chip Kelly thing. So I thought maybe it would be a good fit for Kaepernick. We'll see how that works out. There's just so much. Okay, let's get back to the Super Bowl. The two teams who actually can win a championship today. Phoebe, you got the Panthers and you got the Broncos, and I know both are, you know, but you got to make a selection. So who are you picking?
I'm choosing Carolina to win it. I've gone back and forth in my head, and honestly, I think it's one of those games where I feel like you're going to get a sense of it in the first quarter. Whoever comes out faster and capitalizes on any mistakes, I think that's the team that's going to win. It could have the potential to be close, or it could have the potential to be a blowout. But I chose a blowout.
Whoa.
But I know that is a ridiculous statement to make, because this is not the same Denver team the Seattle faced. Because obviously now it's a flip. Now you've got Denver being the number one defense. But the thing is, Carolina is not that far away. Versus when Denver faced Seattle, I mean, they were like, what, number 22 in being the defense there? So it wasn't equivalent of what could happen. So I feel like when their defense is so close to each other, it's going to go – it's going to be offset by the offense. And who has a stronger offense right now? And I would say that's Cam Newton. I mean, they had that stat recently that they posted about how all these quarterbacks that had 50 plus, you know, touchdowns ended up losing in the Super Bowl. But that's a really deceiving stat. They had to add Cam's pass, rush, his regular season and his postseason to get to 50 touchdowns. So the difference is he's a dual threat. And the others, when they got shut down, it's because they're just passing. They're not going to rush for a touchdown. He's more potent. He's more lethal. So I think that he has a chance to do more damage than Peyton Manning. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see Brock. I'm just saying.
It looks like she was listening as well. That was one of the questions we asked earlier. So always some news, always a nugget when we get Phoebe joining us on the program, Green and White Show. I'm Mary Tillich there, Joseph Haas here at Never Complacent. Make sure you check her out. Also, the podcast. Tell us about the podcast.
My podcast on Saturday mornings, it's called Bragging Rights. I have a co-host named Joe. And honestly, it's us just talking about whatever comes into our minds, usually about football, sometimes now about baseball. But it's just fun. I think every podcast, there's so many out there that the only thing that keeps people listening is just who you are. And so
Exactly. Hopefully
that people just listen to the show, end up caring about us as hosts, and keeps coming back for our particular take on how we view the game.
And that's why we always have you coming back and joining us here on the Green and White Show. Phoebe, always a pleasure. Can't wait to have you on again next weekend. Enjoy Super Bowl Sunday, and we'll catch you again, all right?
All right, sounds great. Thanks.
Thank you. Take care. Always a pleasure having her on. Amiri, so little time left to talk football, to talk NBA as well, but we both know what the Warriors are doing, the Knicks falling back to earth. Very few expectations there. Melo off and on with his knee injury. Jimmy Butler suffering a knee injury as well. Prayers for the best and his recovery. So there's a lot going on in the NBA. The Warriors look like they're just, I mean, come on, man. Are you kidding me? These guys are they going to lose 10 games this season? That's what the real question is. They're outstanding. So no real expectations in New York, neither from the Knicks or really the Nets for that matter. as they lose to the Sixers last night.
Right. Yeah, the basketball season is progressing. Obviously, you got All-Star Weekend coming up. They, that's going to be an interesting slam dunk contest. I know they have a lot of returning players. Zach LaVine, obviously, will be in the competition. So NBA season continuing, Haas, continuing along just fine.
All right. So until they legalize HGH and get Vince Carter into the slam dunk contest, I won't be watching that. Just so we all are perfectly clear on that one. Unless they, you know, I mean, and when I say, you know, I mean, like, they've got to, like, hook Vince Carter up to that thing that they have Bane hooked up to and just, you know, give him all the HGH in the world and then let him go out there and go dumb crazy. And then I'll definitely be checking that out. But so quick question on some NBA guys. Kobe Bryant calling it a career. You know, I'm just, you know, he's been in the league. Mary, does What are you gonna do with Kobe out of the league? Like, what's the NBA gonna be without Kobe to you?
Yeah, that's a crazy thought, to be honest. You know, when it comes to, you know, just the way that he has transcended the game. But I think one of the positives that we'll see from Kobe Bryant is he has affected so many current players, like so many young players that are being drafted now. We're growing up and we're kids that were being influenced by Kobe Bryant, just like Kobe
right.
Bryant was growing up and being influenced by Michael Jordan. So I think the generations of the ensuing generations will all have a little bit of Kobe Bryant in them. Like, we even see it to this day where you have, you know, the players that are flashy, not even flashy in that showboating sense, but the flashy in the sense of being able to make plays as a guard that we haven't really seen before in the moves that Kobe Bryant had, the footwork, the flair that Kobe Bryant had, that will trickle down generation by generation. So from that perspective, I think Kobe Bryant's legacy will obviously remain on the court as much as it does off the court with the effect that he's made in making the NBA 10 times, you know, 20 times bigger than what it, you know, was, you know, earlier in his career.
See, we will be talking sports even after the Super Bowl. Green and White Show. Mary Tillett there. Joseph Fox here. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Mary Tillett. Make sure you follow myself on Twitter, at Jersey Haas. You can also follow us on Instagram. Hey, guess what? Predictions time. I'm throwing mine out there. Panthers 27, Broncos 22. That's right. You can take the hook and shove it. That means you've got to bet for the Broncos there if you're going to win. 27-22. I'm just saying 5.5 points is way too much for any Super Bowl. 22 because I think the Broncos will try with a late touchdown to come back and score 21 and then go for the two-point conversion, which will get them 22. That's where I'm going with that. And Mary, your thoughts and your prediction if you've got a spot.
I'm actually right around the same area. I think I'm going to go 27-24, a little bit closer. That last score will come on a field goal, the last drive, kind of one of those field goals that don't affect the game as much. But I think the Panthers will be in the driver's seat. Let's put it that way. The Panthers will be in the driver's seat. Will win 27-24. A little bit of resistance early from Denver, but I think as the game continues, we'll see, you know, the Carolina Panthers begin to take control completely. So 27-24 is my safe thought, Carolina winning the Super Bowl.
Always in control. Remember, Mary Tillich there, Joseph Fox here. This is the Green and White Show. This is our final Football Sunday for quite a while. Can't wait to have us come back and join you as well for some football talk. But we will be joining you each and every Sunday, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for more sports talk. There's an entire season out there. We got MLB, we got basketball, we got hockey. But until then, Carolina Panthers, good luck. Denver Broncos, hope you play well. This is going to be an outstanding Super Bowl. Super Bowl time, my man. Ready?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right. Been waiting all year.
yeah, I know. And I'm also waiting for the music to play, and it's just like not. So God bless. Go Jets. I try to turn this up and take it slow, but I can't. The music's not playing. I can't get the music to play. What am I doing here? What can I say?
Let's just see.
Keep talking for a while. You know me. I can just keep going on and on and on. Everybody enjoy the Super Bowl. Amiri, I'll talk to you next Sunday.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Music not working, but we'll be back next week.
You got it, my man. We do this each and every week for the fans out there who enjoy sports talk. We love having you guys participate as well. Don't forget to send us your tweets, send us your emails as well, get your thoughts on the show as well. So, as I said before, enjoy Super Bowl Sunday, and we will catch you again next week.